Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting from Seattle, Washington with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Today again we have on the show with us Dr. David Berlinski visiting us from Paris, France, and we're going to talk today about the nature of numbers and mathematics, Dr. Berlinski. So thank you for coming on the show with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I know that there have been lots of interesting discoveries of the 20th century, finding that many of the things that underlie reality as we know it are not material. Information is what governs life. Is information a material entity? What about mathematics and numbers? You have expressed the idea that numbers are Platonic ideals, that they can't be reduced to some material form. Can you explain maybe what your ideas are about this and what exactly are numbers?
Well, I think we have a very good understanding in a technical sense with respect to the question, what is a number? Even without the technical explanation, I think all of us are pretty comfortable with 1, 2, 3, 4. We know what that is. There's a certain level of discomfort that occurs when we talk about zero. I mean, what on earth is a number signifying absolutely nothing? And that discomfort starts to multiply when we talk about negative numbers. And recently, at the end of the 18th century, remember, there were English mathematicians who described negative numbers as the devil's plaything. How can a number, which is an indication in some sense of magnitude or quantity, be negative? It's like a negative probability. It doesn't seem to make so much sense. And when we go on, the level of intellectual discombobulation or discomfort increases. Fractions have problems all their own. Real numbers, which seem to be in some sense larger than other kinds of numbers, complex numbers. The attempt to provide a complete philosophical explanation of the nature and origin of numbers goes back to the Greeks, of course. And Plato argued that numbers are, as are all abstract objects, participants in a kind of pure ontological realm. Hence the idea of mathematical Platonism. Numbers are beyond space and time. They exist in their own realm. They have nothing to do with human ingenuity or interaction. And in mathematics, we are essentially discovering, but not creating, a body of mathematical knowledge. It's out there waiting to be explored and discovered. And I suppose the most distinguished exponent of mathematical Platonism in the 20th century was the Austrian logician Kurt Gödel. As soon as you look at a doctrine like mathematical Platonism, all sorts of objections occur to you. For one thing, to say that numbers, or any other mathematical object, are beyond space and time is not all that clear, because beyond is a word that is embedded in a spatial or a temporal context. So there's a certain point of incoherence in saying, here we have these objects that are in some sense beyond space and time. That's like saying there's a part of the map that's beyond a certain portion of the map or a certain frontier. If it's beyond a certain frontier, it's included in the whole idea of a map-like coordinate system. So being beyond something in space and time is always relative to a point of departure or a kind of division. What it is to be pure in being beyond space and time, that's really not all that clear. The other objection was voiced in the 1960s, chiefly by a philosopher named Paul Benacerraf, who said, well, if these objects truly are Platonic and beyond space and time, just how do they exert a causal influence on the mind of the mathematician? How does he come to know anything about an object that is neither in space nor in time? Which is not a bad objection at all, if you believe in something like a causal theory of knowledge, that there has to be some causal ground for what one knows. So this idea of mathematical Platonism, although it's very attractive to mathematicians, they love thinking they're pure enough, and only they are pure enough to commune with these Platonic essences or ideals, is by no means free of difficulties. On the other hand, every other view that you want to offer is filled, it's replete with difficulties entirely its own or their own. Consider the idea that mathematics is a human creation. We just make this stuff up as we go along. And that the creation, say like a sonata in music or a lyric poem in poetry, is entirely contingent upon the existence of the human mind. If there were no human minds, there would not be such things as numbers, or groups, or fields, or rings, or ideals, or whatever you want. That view is very perplexing as well, because if you want to insist that mathematics is the creation of the human mind, it would seem to follow that if there were no human minds, there would be no mathematics. All right, so no human minds, no mathematics. Well, consider a simple mathematical sentence. There is no natural number between the numbers 3 and 4. Fractions, yeah, but no other natural number. 3, you go to 4. Well, was that true 5 billion years ago? Well, there were no human beings around 5 billion years ago, so from the premise that we've already introduced that mathematics is contingent on the existence of the human mind, we would have to say it's false. It was false 5 billion years ago. That makes it almost impossible to understand how our theories in physics, which are completely dependent on, contingent upon, mathematical truths, could possibly be used to retrodict any body of evidence occurring 15 billion years ago when the Big Bang occurred, or 5 billion years ago when the Earth started cooling. Was all our physics false at that time? Well, it would seem to follow. If the mathematics was false, how could the physics be true? That's not a particularly attractive view either. So we have to say that, at least in my view, mathematical objects are what they are, and that attempts to individuate mathematical objects like numbers by an appeal to their ontological status must in some fundamental sense be mistaken. It's not the ontology of mathematical objects that is critical. It's something else.
As you just said, these questions, these are not simply abstract questions. I mean, these have important implications for our ability to do science, because if, as you said, mathematics didn't work the same in the deep past, we can't explore what happened in the deep past through science. This really is one of the foundations of uniformitarianism then.
It is to a certain extent. I mean, it's like so many other things. It's one of the unexpected consequences which kind of jumps out and bites you on the rear end when you least expect it, of a certain kind of worldview. The worldview is that there is the universe which can be explored by the methods of science, and in the exploration, mathematics is entirely one of the devices freely invented of the human mind. It's ancillary to the great enterprise of describing the world in physical or material terms. That worldview turns out to have many unexpected serious consequences. But look, to say the consequences are serious is not to say a talented philosopher or a clever philosopher could not provide a very good explanation for them. But at the very least, we should say these are unresolved issues. Because if we want to go in still another direction, bouncing from mathematical Platonism to a kind of instrumental view of mathematics as a creation of the mind, like the compass or the balance scale or something like that, then we have to come to some sensible account of the role that mathematics plays in the physical sciences. And that turns out to be very difficult. Because in some sense, again, a difficult sense to understand, mathematics is prior to any investigation of the physical world. As Thierry Chartres, a medieval philosopher, said, the invention of numbers was the creation of things. Our very idea of what it is to be a thing in the world depends on our ability to individuate. There's one thing, there are two things, there are three things. If we can't say that, all we seem to be exposed to is a kind of an undifferentiated goo. So mathematics, even before we advance any particular theory, has to be in some sense in some place. But that's very hard to reconcile with the view that it is the physical investigation of the universe that is prior to any other investigation.
Well, this is definitely a fascinating conversation, Dr. Berlinski. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we're going to pick it up with another podcast. So stay tuned for more with Dr. David Berlinski as we explore the nature of mathematics.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.